Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, and earned a bachelor's degree in business communications from the University of Virginia. A world-class marketer, he's been the CEO of Volvo, is credited with reviving the Cadillac brand, and launched the award-winning Mayhem campaign for Allstate. Today, he's the chief operating officer of Team Detroit. His name, Mark Linnane, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Mark Linnane, the COO of Team Detroit. Mark, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Great, Jack. Pleasure to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Oh, that's, boy, something I enjoy talking about. Don't think about it too much these days as I'm so busy. But I grew up, as you mentioned, in a little steel mill town, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh, about 20 miles north of Pittsburgh. And my grandfather had come to this country and settled in that town when he was about 8 or 9 years old from Italy. And worked in the steel mill, Babcock and Wilcox, was a division of McDermott. Everybody worked in the steel mill where I grew up. I mean, all my friends growing up, you know, we were all the same. All our dads were laborers in the steel mill. My dad was a member of the United Steelworkers. In fact, worked in union jobs, general grievance man, shop foreman, that kind of thing, much of his career. His dad worked there for 40 years, my grandpa. Then my dad and his brothers worked in that mill or other mills until it shut down in 1985. So I was really the first one in the family that left Beaver Falls, that went to college. I was fortunate to go to the University of Virginia on a football scholarship, and didn't really know anything about marketing or business, or, you know, we played football, basketball, baseball, tried to get good grades. I'm oldest of four, and it was a great place to grow up. My dad unfortunately passed 7 years ago. I miss him every day, and my mom's still alive, very healthy, still living in Beaver Falls, and I actually met a girl from Ambridge, which is one of the neighboring towns. It'd be like in Detroit being from Canton and Livonia, and didn't know her growing up. We met later on, and her mom lives 10 miles from my mom, and so we go back occasionally to visit. They come up and visit us on occasion. It's my two sisters are still there, and it's great, classic steel mill, blue-collar town with a lot of good people, and unfortunately, the steel industry's moved out. It's been replaced a lot by the airline industry, and, you know, some tech is moving in, some light manufacturing. But very fond memories of how I grew up. You know, we didn't have any money, but we had a lot of love and a lot of family strength. And you know, I've got nothing but warm memories of my childhood growing up.
Mark Linnane, you're recognized as a world-class marketer. What is marketing? If you went back to Beaver Falls and they said, "Sir, what is marketing?" What would you say?
That's a great question. And if you've worked, you know, a big component of marketing is advertising. And I like to say everybody thinks they're an advertising expert, and they usually are, because, I mean, we're all consumers. We all know what catches our attention in terms of television advertising. Now digital's become such a big deal. But marketing is, in its essence, you know, we try to build brands. But I always remind people that marketing is about selling things. And if your sales went up every year and your pricing power went up every year, you really wouldn't care if you were building the brand. Problem is, that never happens unless you are building the brand. And so the businesses I've been in, mainly the car business, Cadillac, Volvo, as you mentioned, ran sales and marketing at GM. We had many brands at that time. We're trying to build the brand, get customers to be loyal, or current customers to be loyal, attract or conquest more customers to the brand, and that means you have to stand for something. So I really believe, in its essence, I try to treat marketing as a sport. I have a sports background, is assessing the playing field, knowing who the competition is, what their strengths are, what your strength is as an organization, as a brand entity, and trying to differentiate that and build strength around that in the marketplace, to deploy your assets in a way that's superior to the competition so that you can attract more customers and keep them loyal to the brand.
Growing up on the south side of Chicago, Mark, we had a lot of salespeople, peddlers, but we had no marketers. What's the difference between marketing and selling?
Well, marketing is where you're really trying to build awareness, get people to consider the brand, the classic funnel, and ultimately purchase it. Get on people's shopping lists and then ultimately purchase it. So the salespeople perform, or the sales function in any industry performs a really valuable function at what we call the bottom of the funnel. So they're not worried, a salesperson's not really worried so much about building awareness, that's marketing, or consideration. But once the customer has you on the shopping list, whether it's toothpaste or a car or auto insurance or a home, then salesmanship, or the act of meeting the buyer's needs in a convincing way and in a way, and I always felt that the most effective salespeople are ones that really tried to figure out what the customer wanted, what they needed, what their aspirations were, what their financial ability to pay is, and then were able to fit those needs together with the product or service that made sense. And I think it's that focus on the customer, whether it's in research and marketing or it's dealing face-to-face with them in the selling aspect, is the individuals and the companies that know that, understand that, do that the best are the ones that I think over time are the most successful.
Let's go back to 1981, and you get hired by General Motors Cadillac Division. How did that ever happen?
I graduated from college, and I majored in I got a liberal arts communications degree, like a business communications degree from University of Virginia, and just needed a job. And I was interviewing on campus and ended up with a job with Gallo Wine Company, which was at that time growing really quickly. If you can believe this, had 50% of the U.S. wine market at that time. And they had a management training program where you went out to L.A. and you learned for a couple years in Modesto, their winery, and then L.A. And then they would relocate you back east. They're having a tough time getting the Californians to move back east to run the distributorships in the States. And I went out there in that and didn't really like it. Well, you know, I was still 22. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Thought I might want to go back into sports or back into coaching. I played football in college, and I met the man. I ended up playing golf with the guy that ran the region for Cadillac, and he started talking to me about an opening in his place in the regional office in customer relations. And I said that I was kind of enjoying living in L.A., had a nice girlfriend, nice weather. I said, okay, I'll come in and interview, and I got the job. I didn't really know much about cars at all. And what I found out, customer relations, was you answered complaints all day on the phone. And back then, this is 1981, the car aficionados listening will probably remember, Cadillac had an 864 engine that stalled out on the road. It had a V6 engine that vibrated, almost shook you out of the car, with these big chariot wheels that snapped off when you went through the car wash. The express down windows were really express. The windows fell into the door and you couldn't get them back up. So I used to joke that as customer relations manager, I had the most job security in the whole place. But I learned a lot. I developed a real empathy for the customer. Cadillac improved its quality, and I had a great time. I moved around the country from there in various sales and marketing positions, lived in Seattle, Philly, New York twice, ended up in some central office positions, ended up running marketing for Cadillac, and then had the real honor and pleasure after doing a stint at Volvo to come back to be general manager of Cadillac in 2001, and probably had three or four of the best years of my career when what was the beginning of a renaissance for Cadillac back then, and enjoyed it very, very much, and have just great memories and associations and friendships among the Cadillac dealers and the extended family.
We're talking to Mark LaNave, and he's credited with reviving the Cadillac brand. When we come back, we'll ask him how he did it. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're talking to Mark LaNave, who joined Cadillac in 1981, ultimately rose to the general manager position of Cadillac, and he's credited with reviving the Cadillac brand. Mark, how'd you do it?
Jack, I was partly, mainly right time, right place. I came back from Volvo, which actually was part of Ford at that time, to Cadillac to be general manager in 1981. Cadillac had a new product program in place with the current design language that they carry forward to this day. And we came in, and I had a young team. We didn't know any better. So we really joined together working with the dealers, and we developed a whole system for the way that we were going to go to market to try to make Cadillac cool again, new selling processes, try to a revitalization of the way the dealers looked, how they treated customers. And then a couple things happened. We did a new ad campaign where we used Led Zeppelin music, rock and roll, and kind of said, you know, been a long time since we rocked and rolled, which was kind of a little poke of fun at ourselves that Cadillac had fallen on hard times but was coming back. And then we caught on, the Escalade caught on with the hip-hop crowd. At that time, MTV videos were a big deal. And we positioned the Escalade as the first SUV that wasn't shown in mountains and crossing streams and, you know, doing off-road stuff. We put it right in the city, like an urban assault vehicle, and it really caught on as it had great street credibility, what the kids call street cred, and the younger folks really took to the car. I think they told their parents, "Hey, get an Escalade, it's cool," and we caught fire with it, and it helped the other products that we were bringing out, and we doubled sales between 01 and 04, literally doubled retail sales, went from fifth in the market to second behind only Lexus at that time, and I had more fun with my team than I deserve. I felt guilty getting my paycheck. We had so much fun working with the dealers and the product developers and design team on bringing Cadillac back. And then I think to some extent, through the difficult time 05 to 08, I moved on to be vice president of sales and marketing at GM. Cadillac kind of stymied some, and now has been doing a little bit better again, which is, you know, not so great for me to see now because I'm on the Ford team, but, you know, I still, like I said, have good memories of the group there. That was an interesting period of time, if I could talk about that for 1 second. You know, the downturn of the auto industry, people kind of peg it in 08. It really started in 05 with Katrina because gas prices doubled overnight when Hurricane Katrina hit. And GM was very dependent on trucks at that time, made all the money on trucks, had a million of them on the ground. Today, I'm not sure they even got 500,000 of everything in inventory. We had a million trucks on the ground, truck-based products, and they really stopped selling. And the revenue in the industry fell off 60% between 05 and through the end of the catastrophe. And my team, I believe to this day, did heroic work in that window that'll never be recognized. But it ended like it ended, and I left for Allstate. Had a great experience there running sales and marketing, Allstate Insurance in Chicago. Never gave up my home here in Michigan. We can come back to that. But landed back at Team Detroit and running what we call Global Team Ford 20 months ago. And it's been a thrill and a delight to be part of the Ford team, I can tell you that.
In 2009, you leave GM, you go to Allstate. As long as I can remember, they had this fabulous campaign, "You're in Good Hands with Allstate," with Ed Reamer. Iconic. And you start this crazy mayhem campaign. Why?
That's a great question. I got back, when I got to Allstate, they were still using "You're in Good Hands." They still use it to this day. And it's one of the iconic campaigns, as you said, in the entire marketing world. We were using an "Our Stand" campaign, featured Dennis Haysbert. He's the actor who played the president on 24. Terrific guy. He's got a big, booming baritone voice. And he was our spokesperson. And it's a very effective campaign. But what we were finding in the research, well, a couple things were going on. The direct players, Geico and Progressive, that don't have agents, were, you know, working on a price model, a discount model, and were taking some business. And some of the advertising, Dennis had been the spokesperson for 6 years. We were seeing that strong likability, favorability, but the message was getting lost. So we thought we had to have a way to shake it up, to cast some doubt into people's mind. Are you really covered when you're with some of these discount players? So we invented a character. It started as Mr. Mayhem, then it became just Mayhem. And when I saw an actor named Dean Winter on the casting reel, I said, "That's got to be him," because he had this kind of snarky, dark side to him. And it started off a little slow, but then, boy, did it catch on. And it's one of the great campaigns in America, I believe, right now. And Allstate performance has been really good the last couple years when I was there, and the last 2 years since I've left, or 20 months since I left, and they're doing terrific. And I think they would tell you that the campaign's really working for them, and it's just fun to watch. I still enjoy everyone I see on TV.
You come back in 2012, you go to work for Team Detroit, and the parent company is WPP. And they send you all over the world, Brazil, London, Germany, et cetera, et cetera. Tell us about WPP.
WPP is the largest, currently the largest holding company for advertising, marketing companies in the world, run by my boss is a British knight, Sir Martin Sorrell, a terrific guy. There's 150 agencies that we wholly own, some of the biggest names in advertising, J. Walter Thompson, Gray, Young & Rubicon, Ogilvy, Wunderman, Mindshare. We have associations with another 200 or 300 agencies, and my job is we're custom built. We're a WPP agency called Global Team Ford. The entity here is called Team Detroit. And we have other entities similar to Team Detroit called Blue Hives, blue for Ford Blue Oval, around the world in the next 15 or 16 biggest markets, which you've mentioned. I've been visiting some of them recently. And I run that. So we're custom built to serve the Ford business, the great Ford brand, Lincoln brand, Ford customer service around the world. We do a lot of things for Ford. They're great partners. We're incredibly interconnected with them, and they've done, as everybody's well documented, the Ford team over the last few years stayed out of bankruptcy, have totally revitalized their product program, the lineup under the One Ford plan, developed by and led by Alan Mulally, and they're just it's just a thrill to be part of such a vibrant business and serve that business. I'm having a blast.
In April of 2013, you become the president of Ford's Lincoln Brands ad agency. How are you and your team going to revive this iconic brand?
Well, my team, Jack, is supporting the efforts of a lot of people at Ford. Ford, as you know, during the downturn in the industry, sold off some of the other brands, luxury brands that they had, Volvo, Land Rover, Jag, Aston Martin. I wasn't involved then. I believe was truly the right decision, and have really focused on the Ford brand. Then, as part of that, they've now begun to, in the last several years, really focus on a revitalization of Lincoln. The global model is you've got a strong mainstream brand, that's Ford, and a strong global brand, or luxury brand, that's Lincoln. So, think about it, Toyota, Lexus, Volkswagen, Audi, well, it's Ford, Lincoln. We're going to start in the U.S. We've got big aspirations for China. We've got a new product, the MKZ, on the road. We've got a new luxury crossover, the MKC, coming next year. It's already been introduced, getting rave reviews, some other future stuff planned. And my team is trying to help getting the right kind of marketing to get people aware that it's an all-new Lincoln. It's not the Lincoln you knew. It's got exciting products in the hot segments. You've got all the German cars and even Cadillac all trying to do the same thing, basically, around rear drive performance. We're different. We've got different kind of cars, all-wheel drive, front drive, crossovers, with beautiful interiors, the latest luxury, with a lot on the drawing board. So it's a product-driven business, and my team really tries to support that with getting people to be aware and get Lincoln on the shopping list. And we're off to a good start, but it's going to get even better from here. And we've got great leadership with people like Jim Farley, Matt Van Dyke, and the folks that are entirely focused on Lincoln over there. Giving us direction. We work as a team, and I'm very optimistic. It won't happen overnight, but I'm optimistic that we'll get Lincoln in a very good place in relatively short period of time.
We're talking to Mark LaNave, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Mark LaNave. Let's jump back to 1988. You've got a big show for your dealers in Vegas, and you're going to have this fabulous show. It changes your life. Tell us about that show.
Yeah, during that, I was what we called the shows and exhibits manager, so I was put on all the auto shows and all the big, back then we do big dealer meetings, car shows with these big elaborate dance numbers and pyrotechnics and a whole lot of things to bring the new cars out on stage. And I think we were bringing out the 89 DeVille, which was a big introduction for us. And we had hired some Broadway performers, dancers, singers, models, etc. And I meet this one gal during rehearsals, and we start talking, and her name's Paula Bellis at the time, and find out that we grew up, as I mentioned earlier, very close together in Beaver County, PA. Me from Beaver Falls, or from Ambridge, and it's unusual to meet other people from Beaver County, especially in Las Vegas. And so we started dating, and 3 years later, we were married in 91. had a long-distance relationship, and I got her to move back to Detroit. She was here about 3 months. I got transferred to New York, so we went right back. So it worked out okay because she got some of her old jobs back. But we got married in 91, and then 92, we were blessed with two twin sons, Jake and Drew, who were 9 pounds and 7 pounds when they were born. So it was, out of my tiny little wife, it was hard to believe, but two very healthy boys were born full-term babies.
Almost 20 years to the date. They were born on March 12th, 92.
Yep, their birthday's coming up.
And they're 3 years old, and what happens?
Well, we started noticing that they weren't, they seemed perfectly normal. They're beautiful kids, and they crawled at the right age, and they walked at 11 months, but they weren't acquiring language like they should have been. And either one of them, they had a couple words, but not much. So we were checking with the pediatrician. He seemed like a really good guy, and he said that they seem normal. Twins sometimes talk late. Twin boys talk even later, and identical twin boys talk the latest. So I wouldn't worry too much. And this went on over a course of 2 years old, two and a half, and about three. Said, I mean, you might have a problem. I want you to go to University of Michigan Hospital and have them diagnosed for a potential pervasive development delay. So any parent out there that's gone through this knows what I mean. PDD, which is another word for autism at that time. And so a Dr. Luke Tsai at the University of Michigan diagnosed them, a very elaborate couple-day evaluation, and informed us that Jake was definitely autistic and that Drew wasn't sure, was probably in the spectrum, and I've come to learn that it is a huge spectrum with all kind of various abilities and capability within it, and that we needed to start treatment right away in terms of speech therapy and other kinds of therapy. So, Jack, that began our journey. So they're be 22 on March 12th. So 19 years ago, it really started. I can remember it to this day, talking to Dr. Tsai in the office, and I went to I'm Catholic. I went to church afterwards, and I remember that too. And my life's never been the same since that day, or my wife's, obviously, and it's affected our whole family in good ways, and has been in many ways that have been difficult. But I, we've certainly looked at it as God gave them to us for a reason, and we're going to do the very best we could. And from that day forward, in terms of them, we wake up every single day and try to do the very best we can for our kids.
You and I met on Super Bowl Sunday coming back from New York City, and a week or so later, I'm driving, Mark, and I'm at the corner of 13 Mile and Greenfield at the light. Red light, I look over, and here's this Judson Center, and there's a sign, and it says, every 20 minutes, a child is diagnosed with autism. Tell us about autism.
Autism is a developmental disorder. It's now affecting about one in some ways about one in 90 boys that are born in the United States. I don't know if that's an increase over previous rates, Jack. I'm not sure if it's better diagnosis or if there's environmental factors involved. I'm smart enough to know, but it affects each individual differently. Even my twins, which are, their DNA is the same, their identical twins are very different. We can probably get into that, but it's a spectrum, and it's characterized by slow speech development, weak social skills, not having the ability like most of us do to understand what other people are thinking, or limited ability to do that. Sometimes characterized by real cognitive delays. So you'll have the range, and I know lots of people with autism. You have the range from people that are nonverbal to that are extremely high functioning and may work alongside you in your place of business that are somewhere on the spectrum. Asperger's is one kind of autism where brilliant people that have come off as very eccentric or have a skill in mathematics or in memory or something that's art that's extraordinary. But it can be a debilitating disease, and it's not a disease, a debilitating condition, because the people look normal, which is a blessing, but when you first meet them, if you met my two sons, they look perfectly normal. And Drew, you might even get away with not realizing anything's going on for a while because he's extremely high functioning. Jake, you would know, certain period of time. But it's a struggle because there's no physical markers. It's characterized by behavior. The behavior changes over time. It's unpredictable how they'll respond to certain stimuli or medication or any of that. I'm on the board of Autism Speaks. There's a lot of research that's gone into it. A lot of advances have been made in treatment. But we're still a long ways away from a magic bullet or a medication treatment or anything like that to really say that we know we have a way to cure autism. It's tremendous advances have been made in therapy, what they call applied behavioral analysis. And we can do a lot more than we could do 20 years ago, 30 years ago. But it remains a big challenge for the families and the individuals that are affected with it.
When I meet people with special needs children, Mark, they refer to these children as their hero, their angel, their gift from God, their teacher. Why is that?
Well, I think, Jack, it's so humbling to have kids that are special needs. And, you know, in my particular case, both boys are autistic spectrum. It's the only two children we have. And they are my heroes. They and their mom, my wife Paula, is my hero for what everything she's done and dedicated her life to these kids. And Drew is now at the University of Iowa in a special program. He will graduate. It's a 2-year program. Very only one we found like it in the whole country. They only take 20 kids a year, and he'll graduate from that program in May. He graduated high school at a magnificent place called Eaton Academy in Birmingham with a high school diploma, which we were elated that he was able to achieve. And he has to work so hard he gets great grades, but part of his disability is he's a little obsessive compulsive and he wants to do everything perfectly. So he'll literally redo homework 4 or 5 times because he'll smear one letter or he won't like the way the staple is in the corner of the paper. But the work's perfect. And that takes time for him to worry about those things. It puts a stress on him. But he just tries so hard. He goes to bed every night around 8:30, 9 o'clock because he's just exhausted from how much he pushes himself and forces his brain to function to do things that a lot of us don't even think about. We just do naturally and in the spare part of our brain someplace. And Jake is also does really well. He reads, he writes, he talks, he has full language. We're working on some kind of a vocation for Jake. He goes to the autistic school run by Wayne County, the Berger School in Garden City. We have a caregiver that helps him almost daily with cooking, cleaning, life skills, exercise. And Jake tries tremendously hard. And so they become your hero because it's just so special that you can't take anything for granted. And everybody, I always say, my dad used to say, everybody's got their box of rocks. Some are just bigger than others. And you know, every family has challenges and what have you in their own way. But, the little victories that you get, the achievements. Drew just graduating high school I cried my eyes out at the graduation ceremony. And it was just unbelievable to us that everything we'd been through, he was able to do that. And that Jake is gaining more independence, and we've bought a condo, and he's starting to transition him into the condo to give him some level of independence. And these kids just make you really marvel at the human spirit, I think, that's in all of us, that comes out in different ways, given the challenges that you have in life.
We're talking to Mark LaNave, and I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to COO of Team Detroit, Mark LaNave. Mark, you are a man of passions, but you have phenomenal passion for something called Eaton Academy, and you mentioned it in the last segment. Tell us about Eaton Academy.
Well, Jack, I'm so thrilled you asked me about Eaton so I could talk about him for a second. We've had countless doctors, therapists, teachers that have helped us and helped the kids, and you meet some wonderful people when you deal with the special needs. There's a lot of criticism given on how much support there is through the healthcare and mental health systems and what have you, but there is really, I think, increasingly number of resources and just a lot of people that care. And when the boys went to public grade school through fifth grade, and they were in two separate classes, and they got some level of support. But when they reached middle school, we knew it wasn't going to work for either one of them to remain in the public school system with their disability for middle school. And through a series of evaluation, we ended up placing Jake at Berger School for Autism in Garden City. But Drew, we found Eaton Academy in Birmingham. Now, we live in Northville, so it's a pretty long ride. Eaton's on 14 Mile, just east of Woodward. But Drew got in, and you have to be able it's a week-long evaluation in class that they do, and Drew barely got in. And because they have to be able to cognitively see that you can track toward a high school diploma. Most do get there. 94% of our graduates at Eaton Academy go on to secondary college education or some kind of trade school. It's versus 12% of learning disability people in the public school system nationally. And so we became heavily involved with the school. Drew went there from 6th through 12th grade, graduated with a 3.6 grade average, went to community college for a year, and then got accepted in his program at Iowa, was honor society. We don't believe he would have graduated from any other institution that we've seen. They have a classroom size of 8 to 10. Not focused. Drew's very high functioning autistic. School started actually is a school for dyslexia 27-28 years ago, except what we call different learners, and they really customize, highly trained teachers, faculty, staff. They customize a curriculum for each kid, use all the latest techniques in terms of teaching reading dyslexia, working on social skills, mathematics. But you know, track through. Drew took chemistry and algebra 2 as a senior, and just the way that they teach the kids to deal with their disabilities, help them organize their work day at school, deal with emotional issues that arise, social issues that arise out of their disability is magnificent. The headmaster, Pete Pullen, does just a magnificent job. I'm on the board. I've been on the board since Drew started there, and we just have – Drew's graduated now, but we just have such passion for – it is an alternative to certain kids where they'll get an experience and have a chance to excel and not feel different and be accepted. And it's expensive. So we have a huge scholarship program, but I've just got such passion, as my wife does, for making that opportunity available to more kids and enhancing the overall facilities and curriculum at Eaton Academy.
If you want to learn more, www.eatonacademy.org. Mark Lenny, for the last 30-plus years, you've been joined at the hip with auto dealers. Talk to us about auto dealers.
Yeah, Jack, I didn't know you were going to ask that question. And I tell you, I love the fact you asked me, because I've been in the car business, as you said, one shape or form, 30 years. The most fun I have, the most enjoyment, probably one of the things I'm best at, is really working with car dealers, trying to help them with their business, trying to help our business help them better. They're the backbone of many small towns and communities. We do a show called with the Ford dealers at NADA every year. We honor 7 or 8 Ford dealers from around the world on what they do for their communities. And it is unbelievable. We've got dealers that have started children's hospitals, huge foundations, underwrite the Little League and the fire department and in the medical vans and helicopters, and I could go on and on and on, but they provide employment, they provide community support. They handle, in the case of Ford, all of 3,000 dealers handle all of our customers nationwide in a winter like this with potholes and snow and ice and wrecks, and they keep the customers on the road, keep their vehicles running, and just really serve, I think, just the prototypical backbone small business of America that really makes America go, and they're just they're the heart and soul of the car business. I love working with them. I have hundreds and hundreds of dear friends that are car dealers, and it provides as much joy and fun to me in my working life as anything else I've ever done, working with car dealers.
A lot of small business owners have a giving heart, but it seems that these auto dealers in every little town, they are the Little League. They are the Campfire Girls, etc. Oh, just, it's like part of being an auto dealer. Why is that?
I think that, their customers live, you know, they're assigned to a geographic location that they're responsible for. So their customers, they live and work among their customers. Mobility is kind of the backbone of America. You know, it's transferring into into IT now, you know, but mobility, with using that vehicle, was what really made America the greatest country in the world. And the car dealers, I think the other thing that makes them really special is they're generational. I've met dealers now where they're the great-grandson of the founding family. It's been in the family the whole time. And I knew a dealership where five brothers ran it, and the youngest one was actually the dealer. But they just knew that the older brother was good in service and the other one was good in used cars. And the baby of the family was actually the dealer. He was the most had the most general management skills. And I've met, you know, more dealers where, you know, it's just what their family does is they run these dealerships. They get involved in the community. They know their customers. They know the local businesses. They're either servicing or selling or doing business with the other local businesses. And it really provides a great, I think, economic life stream in these communities and a lot of glue to the local business communities and a lot of the towns that they're represented in.
As our time winds down together tonight, what advice would you give our young listeners?
Well, in terms of business, it's, you know, as you're getting out of college, I had no idea I was going to end up in the car business. I didn't grow up a car nut. I'm kind of one now, but my dad wasn't, you know, so he drove all used cars, used Fords, by the way, which ran pretty well. So I would get started on something that you think has interest, and then don't put walls around yourself. Learn. I think that the people that I've seen do the best in business is the ones that learn the quickest. And, you know, you got to have a good education. That always helps. You got to know how to get along with people. But if you can survey the landscape and learn really quick, you know, if you don't have a specific skill going in a job, learn it on the job. Learn it at home on the computer. Talk to other people. Be intellectually curious about the business you're in, the competition's business, associated businesses, and keep your mind open to new possibilities. And, you know, now the world's a real small place. IT technology, the internet is shrunk it, and it's almost limitless. So keep an open mind and know that every day could bring something unexpected, and try to make it a learning opportunity.
Mark LaNave, you are the American dream. And most importantly, a great man. Keep up the great work.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.